Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Star Trek Voyager series regular, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at miro.com/diagram now.
Did you like my y'all at the beginning?
I did. I speak Southern. So
you do, yes. Speak Southern.
I do.
North Carolina and then Georgia.
Y'all.
And me, Tennessee. Y'all is very, very popular. People
yes,
use
it
that.
Is. Yes, it is.
And for those of you who are not Americans, that is a contraction of you and all. Y'all. So there you go.
When I was in high school, I had a summer job in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And they had a phrase that I think is very local and regional up there. Instead of y'all or you guys, they say yuns.
Yuns.
Yuns. Like, are you ones coming down to the game or yuns?
Interesting.
Or yuns. Are yuns going downtown?
Are yuns going down? Oh, yuns.
Yuns.
Let me see how that sounds.
Hold on. Like y'all.
Here we go. Let me just try the intro with that. Hey, yuns. Welcome to, it's harder for me to say that. Like, yeah, hey, y'all.
That's the Pittsburgh way. That's the Pittsburgh way.
All right. Hey, yuns. Welcome yuns. To the Delta Flyers.
Okay.
That is new to me. I've never heard of that. What job were you doing in Pittsburgh?
I worked at a theme park one summer.
What?
Called Kennywood Amusement Park in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, doing the kids show during the day and doing a big band review at night. I was doing six shows a day or something at the theme park in the entertainment division. It was a summer job, and it was between my junior and my 11th and 12th grade year in high school.
So they recruited from all around the country or just from Georgia?
The company that put together the shows for some of these smaller amusement parks that didn't have their own entertainment division. If you're not Disney World, you're a small park, you hire an outside company, and that company was from Atlanta, Georgia. So they did kind of put a lot of the staff together, and then they hired locally.
Yeah.
So I think I was the only actor, I was the only performer in that show that was from Atlanta. I was sort of there. I was brought up as a utility person to be in the kids show and then to sort of be the manager, but I didn't really have to do anything, but sort of their eyes on the ground, I guess. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, this must have been pretty exciting for you to leave Georgia, to go to another state for the summer.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
So you had some fun memories from that time, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It was a great summer. It was a lot of fun.
Right. And it's better than that other amusement park we just talked about in the Admiral's Call, the one that documentaries.
Action Park. Yeah. Action Park in New Jersey was a very dangerous water park or whatever. And there's a great documentary. I think it's called Class Action Park.
Yeah.
About all the lawsuits and the horrible.
Most dangerous amusement park in the world, at least in America.
They were sort of proud of it. It was like, that's how they promoted this place, is like, it's action packed and dangerous. You might get killed.
There may be grave injuries, but come on down, bring the kids. So that's Action Park. So this is a documentary on Netflix. What platform?
I don't know where it is, but somewhere online you can find Class
Action Park.
I think it's called
Park.
Class Action Park.
Okay. Yeah. I want to watch this. I'm just,
it's
curious.
Really good. It's a great documentary.
So funny. Yeah. All right. Are you ready for this week's episode?
Let's do this week's episode. Very excited.
Yes. You don't ask. You usually ask me the name.
What is the name?
Okay, good. The name is Infinite Regress. Now, we've kind of talked about this at the end of last episode.
Yeah.
Regress or regress?
How would you go with regress?
Okay, regress. Yeah. Infinite Regress. Excellent.
Yes. Yes.
All right, y'all or yuns, we will be right back with our recap and discussion of Infinite Regress.
See you, everybody.
Robbie and I are now back from watching Infinite Regress.
Yes, we are. That was an intense episode. Very different. Very different than, I think, our average episode. It was just the whole structure of it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a huge 7 episode.
Big 7 episode. She handled it well with all the different personalities that she had to take on. I was very impressed. And also, a bit of jealousy is in my body because you know me. I love to do impersonations, and this would have been my dream episode if I was allowed to have doing multiple characters, Klingons and
multiple
Vulcans
personalities.
And, oh my gosh, this is the dream episode for me, Garrett Wong. I mean, as a person, I love that.
Well, so, she did an awesome job.
Oh,
and I think, honestly, I didn't remember this episode. So it surprised me.
Yes.
All of the stuff she did. And I was actually surprised at her ability to be a character actress, to really transform into these characters. I thought she did a really good job.
And I got to say, she and I both fall under Year of the Monkey. We're both Year of the Monkey in the Chinese Zodiac. And that is the entertainer of the Zodiac. Yeah. So she and I are good with voices and characters, and she knocked it out of the park on several of those characters.
Great.
Okay.
Jerry was great.
Let's do our poetry right now. So here's my haiku
for
Infinite Regress. Klingon 7 eats. Too many voices to count. Cat is caught is fun.
Wow. You got highlights in there for sure.
You know, highlights, but I kind of, these are just, it almost was so
impressionistic.
Yes,
moments.
That's what it was. Just very that was a very impressionistic haiku. All right, let me hear this limerick.
Here's the limerick for a very complicated and dense episode, Infinite Regress.
Let's go.
Here we go. 7 gets a pesky multiple personality from the past. She can't seem to break free. To get those voices expelled, Tuvok does a weird Vulcan mind meld. Now 7 must learn from Naomi.
So what was the thought process behind throwing weird in front of Vulcan mind meld? Were there other adjectives that didn't work, that didn't fit?
Yeah, the rhythm's a little off on this one, but it was that mind meld was a trip.
Yeah,
like that mind
meld.
So
you could have said trippy mind meld as well.
I could have said,
right?
Yeah.
Was there a runner-up adjective that you had other than weird? I'm just curious if you were thinking of, maybe we go with this.
I can't remember. I did think of some other ones.
Yeah.
Crazy or bizarre. I don't know.
Right.
But I just wanted a one syllable.
Yeah.
Because I had too many syllables.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. That's the thing with the limericks. Like if you have too many syllables, it doesn't flow that well.
Land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's jump into the people who we guessed wrong entirely. It was David. You know, David Livingston should be the answer for every single one almost.
Yeah, David Livingston directed it, he probably did.
And he did a good job on this one, I felt.
Did a great job.
Yeah. Jimmy Diggs, our friend Jimmy Diggs and Robert J. Doherty were the they came up with the story, and Doherty went ahead with the teleplay. He wrote the teleplay. And I got to say, I love the subtle humor in this episode.
I think
there was a lot of there were 4 or 5 moments of awesome subtle humor. And I have often been guilty of being very critical of the Voyager writers and saying that they're not good at writing humor for anyone other than the Doctor. And it's just, and I've always talked about, oh my gosh, I wish the human characters could be funnier. And I have to say, Robert Doherty knocked it out of the park. I wish there was more teleplay by Robert Doherty. End of story.
Yeah. There was a lot of humor and a lot of comic moments, even with Naomi, with 7, with Naomi, with the Doctor.
Yes.
Tuvok had some moments.
Oh, my goodness.
Janeway had a couple good moments.
Yes.
You and I didn't have much at all to do in this episode.
No, we were minor players in this completely. But just like you say, a good episode is one that includes every character. I think one that includes comedy or humor with every character, to me, is a knock it out of the park episode. So I'm going to... Yeah. When we do the rating at the end, it's going to be better than most people's ratings.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Guest stars, Scarlett Palmer. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about Scarlett before, playing Naomi Wildman. So good to have her back on the show. She was really good in this episode.
She was really good.
We also had Neil Maffin playing Ven.
Yeah.
And
the alien 6339 captain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was Ven. Mm-hmm. Neil Maffin is from Shenandoah, Iowa.
Okay.
So all that's where Kate Mulgrew is from, right?
Yeah,
not Shenandoah, but she's from Iowa.
Right. From Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The other co-star that I found listed was Erica Murr, who was the little girl.
Oh, the one in the alternate reality Tuvok mind meld. Okay. So that's what's her name again? Say her name.
Erica Murr.
Erica Murr. Okay.
She was born in 1988 in Texas.
Thank you for doing that research. I appreciate that. Let us begin.
So here we
recap.
Go into the show, as they say.
Diving
right in. We find Seven on a regeneration pod.
Mm-hmm.
And as we pan across the regeneration bay, the cargo bay where her regeneration pod is.
Yeah.
As we open the episode, we're hearing voices and panning through, but it's an empty cargo bay. There's no one else there.
Nope.
Except for Seven. And I thought that image, whether David Livingston came up with it or whether it was scripted, you know, it may have been scripted that it said pan across the, you know, as we look around the cargo bay, no one's there, but we hear voices. The only person is Seven.
Yeah.
It may have said that, or maybe David Livingston just interpreted this as the director, but it was a great shot because it started on a crane shot, but I don't know if you noticed, turned into what they call a step off. So that means the Steadicam operator was riding on the crane, standing up.
Okay.
And he gets lowered down to the floor level and he steps off that crane.
And he continues the shot. Oh, wow.
So it was a very flashy opening shot.
Yeah.
I've done that shot a couple of times, but it takes a long time because the crane...
Yeah.
To lift an operator up in the air, you need a counterweight, just like on a seesaw, right?
Right.
So you have to counterweight it. But when that weight is on and the operator steps off.
Oh, goodness.
All of a sudden, the weight is off balance.
Right.
And
it could go. Shoot off like a catapult. Yeah. So
you have to bring that crane down. Then you get people to step on top of it to counterweight the weights.
I see.
So that it's safe and the timing has to be just right. So
it's a team effort to get this done.
It's a complicated shot. I'm sure it took a long time.
Did you notice any shakiness from the actual movement of the camera operator off the crane, the stepping
there
off?
Maybe
of
a bump.
A little thing?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. It's a hard shot to totally get smooth like that.
Right.
But
definitely.
But I thought it was really cool. That shot continues, goes into a close-up, and then she steps out, hands her, she's looking around the cargo bay for where the voices are coming from, follows her out into the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I noticed out in the hallway is it was a wide lens. Again, David Livingston loves those 12, 14 millimeter lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great lens for everything until, in my opinion, she got out in the hall because now you could see down to her waist or something like that. And it made her body look very
Out of proportion.
Like the upper arm is really wide, but then it turns really like spindly.
It tapers weirdly. Yeah. No, I hear you. No.
It distorted her upper body from her hips all the way up and her face was big and I don't know. It was a weird, I was conscious of the shot at that point. But before that, it was really elegant. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she walks down the hall. Mm-hmm. We pick her up stepping into the mess hall and she starts throwing food. You know, there's bowls of food on the table. She's
Let's be specific. The food is anything not meat. So it's vegetables, you know, like salad.
Crackers. Chips
anything
or something.
Not meat is being
peanuts.
Exactly.
It's flaming hot Cheetos.
Tossed to the side until she finds the meat and she starts just devouring this meat. And then all of a sudden the camera, cool camera shot, because you see a reflection in this frosted glass. It's either a cupboard door or a partition. So I can't remember if it was a partition or not, but that's where you see the Klingon reflected eating the same meat. So now we know, something's up. She's got she has another personality inside of her somehow. We don't know
as
how.
As soon as I saw that shot, by the way, the reflection, two things occurred to me. The first thing was, oh, we do that on Resident Alien with Alan Tudyk.
Yes, you do that.
Whenever he walks by a mirror or reflective thing, we see his alien face. And I was like, oh, that's just like Resident Alien.
Yeah.
The next thing I thought of was...
Is that influenced by Voyager, by this episode, you feel?
No, possibly? I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
Just a coincidence.
But it's kind of the same rule as Resident Alien, because we saw the Klingon reflection of Seven, but when you cut back to her, she's not a Klingon.
Correct. She's still
Seven. So it's kind of a artistic interpretation. Yes. It's not a literal reflection that her physical reflection looks like a Klingon.
Right, right.
It's just a creative expansion of an idea.
Yeah.
It's a reminder to the audience. But it was a little confusing to me, just like on Resident Alien. Sometimes we're in this sort of weird gray area, because when Alan Tudyk reflects as an alien on Resident Alien, the rest of the world can't see him that way. It's just for the audience, for the audience to remember he's an alien.
Right. I do think it's cool that this same artistic creative choice was chosen 2 decades before Resident Alien.
I know. So
that's
cool.
Very groundbreaking. Yes. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So where
now
are we
go
now?
To the briefing room.
Yeah.
Kim is giving a breakdown of this huge debris field, 120 kilometers wide.
Yes.
Janeway's there, Chakotay, Tuvok, Torres, Neelix. Yep. No Paris, though.
No, where is Paris? I mean,
Paris doesn't show up till like 20 minutes into this episode. He hardly does anything.
Paris, you're busy and you're working on your 20th century vehicle in your holodeck.
Exactly.
I'm guessing. But yeah, Harry gives a 411 and he finds the overnight sensor logs has something there that's just bizarre. And like you said, 120 kilometer wide debris field. That's nothing to be, I will say that when Seven comes up to next to me, I remember filming this and I remember thinking, oh, thank God, I don't have to say anything technobabble right now. She gets to do it. So she took over for me. And it was almost, and up until, you know, before she arrived in season 4, it was always me saying the entire technobabble monologue. And so having her there was so nice to be able to take a breather, really, because a lot of that technobabble can be really tricky to get out of your mouth. It becomes a tongue twister.
Yep.
And seeing her walk up, and I just remember so distinctly, I was like breathing a sigh of relief when she walked up into frame and took it over for me. So very happy about that.
But we find out, it's a Borg debris field.
That's right.
She says, there's no Borg vessels around. We're going to have to scan. We talk about investigating. But Janeway's like, nope, we're not going to investigate this. The Borg will be back to investigate this debris field and come see what happened to their buddies. Yes. So let's go around this thing.
Yes. Will you humor me?
Yes.
I wanted to. One of the things I've been missing is my impersonation videos. Can I do this one little part right here?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of
course. Right. So the very end of Janeway's speeches, she says,
alter course to avoid the debris. If that's all.
And then Neelix interrupts.
One other piece of business, Captain. It seems we had another incident in the mess hall last night.
And then Torres says, return of the midnight snacker?
I'm afraid so.
Janeway says,
casualties?
And Neelix replies with,
a leg of Calaran wildebeest I prepared for Ensign Risen's birthday. Since Commander Tuvok has been unable to round up any suspects, I'd like to ask that stronger measures be taken.
And then Tuvok, with the killer line, says,
yes.
Perhaps an armed security detail. Then that is, this is the subtle humor that I love from this episode. I really love Doherty's, what he wrote here. I thought
laugh. David played it in the two shot with Tuvok and Neelix. And I got to say, Ethan Phillips and Tim Russ hung out quite a bit. And they had this exact same dynamic.
This of like, energy.
Of was, like Ethan, you know, saying some energetic thing.
Yes.
And Tim Russ would be like.
Dry and.
Super dry and always judgy.
Yes.
And just annoyed. So in that moment, perhaps an armed security detail.
It's so great. Fun. I immediately thought
just
after
like
watching.
Real life.
Yes. But watching this scene, I kept thinking this could have been the Star Trek Voyager spinoff. Star Trek, yeah. Tuvok, and Neelix. I mean, these two aliens are the true alien odd couple. I mean, I love this. These two were great together. They're so
They were great.
Yeah.
We go out in the hallway. We see Naomi sneaking around following Seven of Nine, taking notes.
Yes.
This was the first time I noticed, David Livingston's using Steadicam again.
Yeah.
And I'll just point it out here. And then he used Steadicam more than any episode I've ever seen. He was moving the camera around. He was
in this episode,
360s everywhere, moving the camera constantly, which sometimes was really great. And then sometimes I felt like we were missing opportunities to kind of just hang on a character as they were feeling something because the camera was always
moving. Always.
Yeah, lots of blocking, lots of movement. But this was a great sequence down the hall with Naomi. And finally, she's caught by Seven. Seven says, Naomi Wildman, subunit of Samantha Wildman. State your intentions. I loved it. Subunit.
Please refer to your son that way? Can I just say
subunit?
Kyle McNeil, subunit of Robbie McNeil. Congratulations on your new daughter, is what I'm going to say to your son.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
There you go.
Great, great dialogue in this whole sequence, I thought, between Seven and Naomi.
Wonderful, wonderful. We hear that Naomi wants to try to emulate Seven to become the bridge assistant. And it's just, it's just a nice little bonding scene and with a nice humorous twist to it. Enjoyed it.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, she says, I want to be the captain's bridge assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Seven's like, there is no such position. And then we hear some voices again, laughter, actually. Yeah. And all of a sudden, Seven's personality completely changes. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
She's totally. And she started talking like Jerry Ryan, being like a kid.
A
like
little
she
girl.
Young Jerry Ryan. Talking really, really silly. And she's like, let's go do something, Naomi. And she just had said, leave me alone.
Right.
Subunit. And now she's like, let's do something. Come on, let's hang out. And she goes, let's go swimming. And Naomi's like, no, I can't go swimming.
Without my mom.
Yeah. And then she says, then someone says, what about Catascot? And that's a game that Naomi just loves. She's like, great.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And so they go off holding hands. It was so adorable.
To the Wildman residence.
Wildman's quarters.
Yes.
And we see them playing Catascot. And
what do you think that looks like? When you look at that,
it looks like Chinese checkers to me.
Kinda, but my first thought was Connect Four with a hexagonal board. Because that was my image. But yes, Chinese checkers as well. I could see that.
Yeah. So they're playing Catascot, and you hear Seven talking about her childhood or her family, and she talks about 12 siblings. And all of a sudden, you're like, "What?
What are you talking about?" Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we also see in the board game, which is kind of vertical, it's up on an angle.
Yeah,
we see a reflection, and we see it's not Seven in the reflection; it's another little girl.
Correct.
So we know that, like, what happened with the Klingon reflection. Now there's a little girl; it's another personality kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Torres calls for Seven, and she doesn't answer because she doesn't think she's Seven.
She thinks
she's a little girl. Torres is like, Seven, I know you're there. Answer. And she still sits there, and then finally she calls again, and Seven sort of snaps out of it. We hear these voices for a second, and Seven's back to her normal self, and Naomi's a little confused, and Seven heads off for engineering.
So now she's in engineering, and she hears, she doesn't hear the voices yet. She gets into engineering, and she has a conversation with Torres about some issues they're trying to figure something out. And then the voices come in, and this is when she takes on the persona of the Klingon, who is known as the son of K'Vok. And I'm going to say right now that this, to me, was the best impersonation of all. And of all the impersonations she did, this was such a good Klingon voice. It suits the lowness.
It does. She had a very deep. Yeah, she could definitely pull off a full Klingon if she had to.
And this is when she tries to mate with Torres, your darling woman.
Yeah, which I love, by the way. By the way, B'Elanna turns over to her and she's like, Tom put you up to this, didn't he?
Yeah, she did say that.
What? Why are you involving me? Like, I had nothing to do with this. She's a Klingon all by herself.
You practical joker, you Tommy.
It's a funny idea, though.
It is funny. But then she calls. Torres has to call for security because she's just been bitten on the face by Klingon Seven.
Yeah, and security. Thank God security runs into engineering. Thank God to take control.
They do.
Because then Seven seems to just run towards them and tap them on the shoulder. and they collapse like like wet socks on the ground. They're completely unconscious.
The security team was doing their best impersonation of bowling pins. It was just a joke.
I know she's strong. I know she's 7 of 9, got Borg stuff, but that was embarrassing. Like
a little tap. Yeah.
And they just, and they were unconscious. It wasn't like they got knocked over and then jumped up and started chasing after her. They just fell down and were like, okay.
It was her version of a Vulcan nerve pinch, I guess. Yeah. They just fell.
It was Star Trek original series.
Oh, gosh.
Shatner acting. All the way.
So she runs out into the corridor. She gets away. Now, Tuvok, the Tuvok-led security detail, arrives in the corridors to find Seven is now cowered in a corner. Mm-hmm. And she's now taken on a whole different personality. This personality emerges as a young child again.
She's talking like a little girl. She's like, someone's hurt and he needs help, she says.
Right.
She says, did I do something bad?
Yeah.
And Tuvok says, who are you? And she responds. And again, Jerry's little girl is so sweet and innocent and just wonderfully played.
Yes.
She says that she's Meryl.
Meryl, which I wondered. Is this the same Meryl? Because Mary Howard, one of our producers, her husband was Meryl. So I thought, hey, maybe this is a little tribute to Meryl and include his name as one of the characters.
Could be. Yeah.
So as Meryl, Tuvok is able to release the force field. He walks in there and he's
thinks it's a little child, but suddenly she's changed and she's got a phaser. He goes, release the force field to go get the phaser.
Yeah.
And then he realizes,
Yeah.
She's got a different voice now, and she is a Vulcan.
She's Vulcan High Command.
Vulcan High Command, subaltern Lorat or something like that.
Yeah.
And she asks, how may I be of assistance? So she goes from a child to a Vulcan High Command.
Yeah.
And Tuvok says, well, you could accompany me to sickbay.
Right.
Trying to play along here. So she gets up. Walks ahead. Now, this was a moment I loved where as she's walking forward, we see her in the foreground as the Vulcan. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there are voices again and she stops and her, you know, she gets very angry and kind of Klingon again.
Yeah.
And you see her face in her line. You see Tuvok behind. It was very simple and elegant. And then she turns and kind of starts to attack him. Tuvok has to shoot her in that shot and she collapses. And the shot was great because it was a two shot. You see all the action, the dialogue. They're both facing towards the lens. And then as she collapses, it pushes into a close up. Very elegant, really super shot. Dave Livingston did a great job on that. I loved it.
Yeah. And it was so non-intrusive. You know, it's something that you didn't even notice it happening. And it was flawless and not flawless. It was effortless. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And great shot. And of course, you know, after stunning her with the phaser, now we pick it up in sickbay and we have the doctor there and he's telling Seven that she basically has the Borg version of multiple personality disorder and the cortical inhibitor is suppressing the effect of this MPD, but it's only a temporary measure. There is a little bit of a funny thing because in the beginning, what does she say when she wakes up? She goes,
"How?" I don't even know if she asked, but Janeway, the first thing she says is, Seven, you've been unconscious for 2 hours. And I was like, what? Yeah, you just phasered her. Of course she's out. That's what phasers do. They knock you out unconscious.
They take
for
you
hours.
Out. Exactly.
Yeah, she was out for 2 hours. Duh.
So the cortical inhibitor is on her neck. It's suppressing the effects of this MPD. Torres detected a Borg interlink frequency, and this could be causing her cortical implants to malfunction. And the signal has been coming from the debris field. Then Janeway's is like, well, why don't we just get away from it? You'll be fine. And Seven says, no, unfortunately, this message or this frequency is going through subspace. So it permeates subspace. So it doesn't matter where I go, I'm still going to hear it. So I can't avoid it. So Janeway says, we must go to the debris field. And at this point, this is when...
By the way, in this scene, when the doctor says basically that you've got multiple personalities, I just want to comment on the graphics. Mike and Denise Okuda, when the doctor's explaining this whole concept, I love how graphics can often make our sci-fi stories very clear to understand. And so you see these graphics, And the doctor says, this is your normal neurological pattern or something. Mm-hmm. And you see this very smooth, big waves going along. And then he says, underneath that, you can see these other personalities hiding out. And then he removes that. And underneath, you see all these tiny little scratchy little graphs or, you know, wavelengths underneath.
Yeah.
And for me, that was a great example of how Mike and Denise Okuda, our graphics department, can tell a story, put it into a graphic element that is so simple and clear that you just kind of go, oh, I get it. I get how this technology, the Borg personalities are buried underneath. It's just, I love how they do that. This is just one example. They do it all the time.
But definitely. Cool. And you know, it's nice to have that visual example there. And it's something that it's so subtle. But all the people that it takes to, you know, get an episode up and running, it's just amazing. And the small, tiny details that you don't really notice until you really, really look at every part of the episode. So yeah, they did a wonderful job. So now we're in the corridor and we have a wonderful scene with the doctor, Seven, and Neelix. I just love when Neelix says his line,
I have some wonderful medicinal teas. Maybe I can prepare one for you. And then the doctor has that wonderfully subtle, hilarious line. He says, Talaxian homeopathy. I don't think we're quite that desperate yet. So it was a real great line written by, you know, the teleplay written by this writer. It's such a good job.
I love Neelix's energy when he comes in with this sort of positivity. It's just such an Ethan Phillips kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And when he hands over the card from Naomi, which I love that he's the one to hand that card over.
Yes.
Because we know that has this relationship. We've seen it in earlier episodes, his connection with Naomi. So just keeping that alive, I thought was super sweet.
Yeah.
And this is sort of setting up, because I loved how Jerry reacted when she walked away with the card in her hand.
Yeah.
And you could see the crayon drawing or whatever. But Jerry was already kind of planting the seed of like, this Naomi thing is different. She's really starting to get in touch with her humanity, and that's going to pay off later in a great way.
I mean, this is such a great character development story episode for Seven of Nine, because she is slowly but surely becoming 100% human.
I love, by the way, I mean, you and I have talked about, I have been critical of the way that Seven of Nine sort of behaved in this rebellious teenager way.
I just didn't
buy it. I didn't buy that Janeway would put up with it for that long.
Right.
But in this story, this is the perfect, in my opinion, perfect story to show the complications and to build audience sympathy and empathy for Seven, because she's just so, you see why her character is so tight and so controlling and so wants to suppress all of these feelings and then starting to connect with a child. I think just like Naomi brought out great things in the character of Neelix was the perfect to put Neelix with a child.
Yeah.
I think putting Seven with a child is a genius move. It's just, it's really, no one else could have done it the way that Naomi's character did.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So all around, really, really good episode.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're now in the cargo bay, and the doctor discovers that she has been sleepwalking. Sleepwalking. And now we get to hear some audio files that were recorded by Seven as the assimilated
victims. This is like her logs.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks in and sees her regeneration cycles keep getting interrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, yeah, you've been sleepwalking and you made some logs. So let's go listen to him. So the first log comes up. You hear Jerry Ryan's voice, But again, it's in the character of a young officer, Starfleet officer on his first starship assignment on the USS Tombaugh under some Captain Blackwood,
what?
I think.
The USS what?
Tombaugh Paris. The USS Tom Paris. Captain Blackwood is the captain. But Jerry did a great job of modulating her voice so that you really felt like you were hearing another person. And then, Seven says, I assimilated, the Borg assimilated that ship, Captain Blackwood's ship and its crew 13 years earlier. And that she was the one that assimilated this officer.
Yeah.
So she's not just having one of the collective kind of experiences, but she's specifically remembering, oh my God, this guy, I assimilated him. Very, very sad. There's another log entry and Seven records another file that is some alien female, I guess, dictating a message to her romantic partner. It's a love letter to her, to her romantic partner. And this really, again, really sweet, very different than Seven ever would sound. And she's very upset by this. And the doctor, she walks away and the doctor sort of stops her. And again, it's a little close talking for me. the doctor puts his hand up on her shoulder by her neck. It's very intimate. This, by the way, I wrote down SD Shipper question mark.
Okay.
Because I feel like this is the beginning. I was like, for the first time going, oh, this is not just the doctor taking professional interest in Seven of Nine.
This is personal interest.
This is personal interest. And maybe it's because it was coming on the heels of that romantic love letter or something. I don't know.
No, I think you're exactly right about that. As much as I hate to agree with you on this, because I did not like the combination of Seven and the Doctor, the SD, because my personal opinion is, how can you have a relationship with Microsoft Windows? He is a program. So why is this is happening? But you're right. This is the very beginning.
I think it is.
Little.
Because that hand on the shoulder and standing close. And he sort of keeps the hand as she walks away. It's like the hand
it's still there. It's lingers. Just, oh, my gosh. Yeah. He's lingering. The lingering hand gives it away for sure. So you're right on the money on that one.
We go to the bridge. Chakotay calls. And it is the Borg vinculum we have found. The Borg vinculum.
Yes.
It is a the processing.
Can I just talk about this very quickly? So when we were on the set. I don't know if you remember this, but we were on the set. And this is where Robert Beltran, Chakotay, and Tim Russ, Tuvok, started joking about the word vinculum. They started giving this funny character voice. And it was it was Beltran basically putting on this voice of a 70-year-old man from the South. And he would say something like, meanwhile, back at the vinculum, like that. He would say vinculum instead of vinculum sometimes. He would put a B there, but back at the vinculum. And then Tim Russ would do his version of what a Beltran did. It was a character voice off, you know, that they would go back and forth between saying the vinculum.
Like it was that cartoon character of where he'd say, I said son.
A rooster. Yeah, the rooster guy. Yes.
I think it was that one.
I said son.
Yeah. The vinculum.
It was like that, but to me, it was more Mark Twain. It was a little less.
I remember that on the Brit. Tim Russ and Robert Beltran would go back and forth with the vinculum.
The vinculum line. And this is how we passed the time on the bridge. We would do.
I forgot about that bit. Yes. That was a good bit.
It was a good, wonderful. It was a good, wonderful and funny bit.
And fundable.
So the Borg vinculum is the source of the interlink frequency. This is the processing device at the core of every Borg vessel. It's the CPU of the computer, probably the most important part of the Borg cube. And the vinculum must be taken offline. Seven says this is the only way to deal with this vinculum, and I need to beam this on board Voyager. Janeway's not happy about that. Janeway's like, what? Wait a minute. I don't feel comfortable with this. But in the end, she agrees, and it is beamed aboard. Now, as we go to engineering, there are...
Oh, wait. Before you go to engineering, there's a space shot, and there's the coolest flyby. I don't know if anybody else caught it, but I felt like it was a flyby that caught my attention because the ship's coming at us and it kind of does when they like I must have been piloting at that moment.
Yeah, how piloty of you to recognize that.
It was a cool move.
I was so busy writing notes, I didn't even see that. It's an exterior shot of Voyager banking on doing a little bank move.
I don't know. It was just it caught my eye as I was making notes myself. I was like, oh, that's a cool flyby.
Voyager's flying away from different. Camera.
No, it's coming right at it. It felt a little different to me. All right. I liked it.
Cool. Nice. I didn't even see it, but thank you for bringing that up. So now they're in engineering, and as Seven walks closer to the vinculum, the voices become louder. So the doctor has to adjust the cortical inhibitor on her neck to sort of drown out those voices. And now another wonderful, wonderfully funny comedic interchange happens. You see Torres sees Seven and sort of stops in her tracks because the last time she saw Seven, she was bitten on the face. So she's a little upset. So she sees Seven. She's a little like, oh, my goodness. And Seven looks at her and says, don't worry, Lieutenant. The son of Kavak will not be joining us. And that is when she says, glad to hear it. Does this qualify as our second date? And then the doctor chimes in. Just think of me as your chaperone. And again, great, subtle comedy. Yeah.
Good
in this teleplay by Doherty. I love Doherty. He's my favorite teleplay writer right now.
It was wonderful. Great dialogue. So they probe the vinculum device. Mm-hmm. They realize there's a viral agent, some kind of pathogen, an organism in there. It's trying to attack all the Borg technology. Mm-hmm. And they do find a signature of species 6339 in this virus. And the doctor buttons are seen with, looks like we found our Typhoid Mary. So they have found where this virus came from, species 6339.
Right. So we need to track. We need to find 6339 is what we need to do. Right. This takes us to Astrometrics. Where we're trying to chart where this species 6339 is, where we can find them. And this is where Seven of Nine falls into the next personality we have not been introduced yet to. And here it is. The Ferengi comes out. And boy.
It starts off with a. Oh, my. And she starts marching up on the upper deck. She's walking very differently than
her physicality has totally changed. You're right.
They say something to her and she's like, are you making fun of my ears? There's a great moment about her ears in there.
Yes. But my notes were LMAO, laugh my ass off. But even funnier to me, I initially thought when she went, my, walked up there that she was doing like a James Cagney impersonation or a 1920s sort of character.
She definitely
changed
her voice.
Yeah. Hey, dirty rat. You know, it was that. But then I realized it's Ferengi. And again, very, very funny. Very funny. And of course, Janeway speaks to Seven as if she is the Ferengi. And
says, they play along again. Yes, why don't you come?
Come with us to sick bay.
If you think this is nice, come look at sick bay.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, they go into the sick bay and Seven's Ferengi starts walking around going, well, this needs to be redecorated and renovated and we can renovate this and that. I know a guy and I'll only take 30% of the cost. And so kind of making a deal. And then they put up the force field and Seven's trapped in the back. And the doctor says, this is bad. He's looking at some readings.
Even when she's behind the force field as the Ferengi, she's still, it's still the Ferengi character, which is so funny to watch that interaction there.
And the doctor says Seven may be lost for good. So we're starting to realize these multiple personalities are wearing her down, that she's really her own neural patterns may disappear and she'll get lost in this sort of these other personalities. Just as he says that. We hear another voice from Jeri Ryan, her amazing tour de force of acting. And she's now this very sad mother of a son that she was supposed to meet at Wolf 359. Yeah. She says, I'm looking for my son, Gregory Bergen. And it's a very sad, brief exchange, but you feel like this woman has really, I don't know, it's just the story of her losing her son and then being assimilated by the Borg, being caught up in this battle. Just very sad. And then all of a sudden we hear some voices again, and now she's back to Seven. And now Seven is scared off the heels of this woman's story.
Yeah.
Seven of Nine says, how many voices? They say two voices this time. Janeway explains, and Seven says, I'm scared.
Yeah. But her voice as the woman that's grieving was great. That character was really good too, because she completely, she went there. She started getting choked up over it.
Now we go to the bridge and, I just had a comment here. It's a dark bridge. And I'm like,
yeah,
why is the bridge dark? Usually that we save that for battle or something, you know, low power mode, reserve.
It wasn't
power.
Red alert. It
no, there was no red alert. We're not no. in battle. I was just like, but the only reason I can think of is
what?
Janeway walks in and what is
Chakotay says, meet anyone interesting. So it was a very flirtatious kind of line, to be honest. And then we find out that 12 new personalities have surfaced in the last hour alone. But what's your theory? You have a theory?
Well, here's my theory on this scene. So Janeway basically says, you know, she leans in this dark, dim light.
Yeah.
Romantic light, maybe. And she says, you know, Chakotay, I think maybe you were right. You were right, Chakotay. I shouldn't have brought Seven on.
Yeah.
Then we come around to Chakotay and he's like, no, you were right. Because she's changed and I was wrong. And I was just like, come on, JC writers. Like, this is all. Basically, it was a scene of Chakotay, you were right. And Chakotay says, no, Janeway, you were more right. And then she says, no, Chakotay, you are more most right. You were most right. You were right. Writer. I'm right. You're righter than me.
You're right.
It was a love. It was a love fest.
And it was. JC all the way.
JC scene, JC moment on the bridge was amazing. Go to engineering. Now Torres is starting this dampening field around the pathogen.
To disable the vinculum.
Disable the vinculum, power down. And all of a sudden it's going down, but then it starts adapting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's rerouting internal circuitry.
Now it's adapting. We go into sick bay. Seven's having a seizure. She's starting to have voices and the doctor is starting to, he says, we got to abort this. We come back to engineering. No, we can't abort it. The vinculum is coming back to full power. And the doctor is very emotional in this whole sequence, cutting back and forth with trying to shut down this thing. And finally, we cut back to sick bay. And the doctor is very emotional about this. He says, we've lost Seven. Her neural pattern is gone.
Yeah.
So this feels like she may just have these personalities have taken her over and we've lost her. We cut to the ready room. Mm-hmm. They're having a meeting about this. The doctor, still very emotional, tells the captain, you know, these personalities just keep popping up. There's nothing I could do anymore. We've lost her. And Tuvok says, let's try a Vulcan mind meld. And the doctor's like, come on, are you? No, this is, he calls it Vulcan mumbo jumbo.
Which clearly means he has a crush on Seven, because look at this. He's this impassioned speech to the captain. Mm-hmm. If we don't deactivate this vinculum soon, we may lose her forever. And then Vulcan mumbo jumbo, what do you mind meld? How dare you, you know, suggest that on my beloved Seven? It is really the subtext going on.
Yeah, he's very personally connected. And
very much.
But Tuvok says, this is the only thing we can do. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go to my quarters and prepare.
Yeah.
He needs a couple hours to meditate, he says.
Right. That's right. So now we jump to the bridge.
Yep,
we jump to the bridge, and that's where we have our conversation with Species 6339, with the Captain Venn, I suppose that's his name. Yep. Mm-hmm. Venn does come over to Voyager, and they have a conversation. Captain Janeway and Venn start talking, and then he finds out that Captain Janeway will not give up this vinculum until they find a cure for Seven.
But let's hold on a second. Let's go back and talk about
the
Species 6339 outfits.
Yes, let's talk
about it. You may call them 6339. I like to call them the Saran Wrap Tron Suit Aliens, because basically they're wearing like plasticky Saran Wrap suits over their uniform, with Tron like lights running all up and down.
Okay.
The thing. It was amazing. I've never seen anything like it. Aside from they've also got like antennas on their head.
Yes. I'm going to just say, when I saw that uniform with the Saran wrap or raincoat, whatever you want to call it, clear underneath, it looked like a command Starfleet uniform.
It did look like Starfleet. It had some lights underneath. Like
it did. That changes
Starfleet,
it.
Their underneath uniform had some blinky lights, and then the Saran wrap with the string lights going all around, and they were blue, just like Tron. They were the same kind of Tron blue.
That's true. It was that was Tron blue. And the other note that I wrote down was that the makeup, the actual and the little appendages that came off of their forehead there, it reminded me of a conversation that I had with Michael Westmore, head of makeup. I said to him one day, I said, "What inspires you or your makeup artists that work for you in terms of designing new alien makeups. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he said, well, I use nature. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he had these coffee books, these huge, huge books filled with, you know, creatures of Earth,
photographs,
you know, amphibians yeah. and fish and, yeah. you know, mammals, everything, photographs,
insects, everything,
insects, yeah. you name it. And he says, we go to that. And I do remember as he was leafing through one of these books, it stopped on one of those fish that has, it's basically an appendage that it has a little bit of a light on it, and it lures smaller fish over so that once they try to eat that little appendage, that's when that fish attacks and eats them.
Nice. So, clever
yeah. So
fish.
I feel like, mm-hmm. so clever, I feel like that was fish. The influence of this.
Interesting.
Character.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But they talk about this vinculum and this Ven guy, the alien, the Tron suited alien, saran wrap guy. Mm-hmm. He says that the Borg basically decimated their world.
Yeah.
And they have been looking for ways to avenge that. Mm-hmm. And so 13 of the survivors on their planet agreed to allow themselves to be infected with this virus, this pathogen, and right. then to be assimilated.
Right.
So it was like a suicide mission. Mm-hmm. And then that virus would start to take out the Borg. And that was their way of combating the yeah. Borg.
And Janeway, like I said, doesn't want to give up the vinculum until they figure out how to help Seven of Nine. And this is when Ven starts playing hardball with Janeway. And he's, you know,
he's like, this vinculum could have killed, hundreds or dozens or hundreds or thousands of Borg. Like, you're right. getting in the way. No, yeah. I don't care about your Borg crewman mm-hmm. That you're trying to help. This yep. one Borg crewman, this could get rid of thousands of Borg. Absolutely. Right. So, yep. He's like, put this thing back out there where you found it and let us continue our plan. And mm-hmm. so we go to sick bay and Seven is revived. Mm-hmm. And I wrote down the doc is just in love with her at this point.
Yeah. Because when she regains consciousness, boy, is he happy. He's like, my goodness, let me debrief you, darling. And then she says to mm-hmm. him in the love fest, she's like, and please, doctor, tell everyone that I'm so grateful for all of their efforts to help me. And it's like,
but it is a nice character moment. We start to see Seven really appreciating the humanity that she's a part of.
She is.
And the crew, and that people are standing up for her. I think, you know, didn't she say at some point, like the Borg, if there's a Borg that's not functioning well, that they kill it. They get rid of it.
Yeah.
They dump it.
Yeah.
And that, on the human experience is not mm-hmm. that if someone needs help, the other yeah. crewmen and the other humans step up for it. So that's a whole new experience for her.
It definitely is. And I think that's the strength of this episode mm-hmm. is the character development for Seven, because really, I mean, everything we've been seeing before is just rebellious teenager, you know, ungrateful. And now she sees what humanity is. She sees what caring and compassion is from a fellow human being or fellow being. And it's wonderful. Yeah. I like seeing this type of episode. All right. So the voices overwhelm her again and the doctor sedates her. She's out. She's down for the count. Mm-hmm. Now we have a quick shot of Tuvok in his quarters. And Tuvok is there. He's in midst of meditation to prepare for the mind meld. Mm-hmm. And he's ready. This is his action hero shot. And all of a sudden he's ready to go.
And I love it's like one shot that starts. David just sort of started wide with Tuvok sitting there and sort of pushing in. But I felt like this is such a classic sort of, it felt like Rocky, you know, like they should have been playing Eye of the Tiger or something. And they're like, you know, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, he was getting ready for the thing.
I had so much fun doing that. Can we just continue doing that?
Oh, yeah, it was fine. It was good. Yeah, so Tuvok is getting ready, though. I like with his Eye of the Tiger moment, his hero moment.
Yeah.
Cut to the bridge, the battle starting.
And I think Paris has one line here. He says, the alien vessel is coming about. Maybe that was your line.
Mm-hmm. I think that was my big line.
You had more than one in this
episode. I don't know. I didn't have much to do. That's okay.
Okay. It's okay. That's all right. Okay. Continue.
But the battle is starting. We go to sick bay. Tuvok is, we're prepping for this mind melt. Here's another scene where I think I mentioned this before, but you know, David Livingston really moved the camera in this episode. Lots of steady cam. The steady cam shot down the hallway with you know, chasing Naomi, chasing Seven, all of that. Right. Every scene. I mean, if anything, this episode may have lacked sometimes maybe some coverage or close-ups, but as far as camera movement, it was really active, really diverse in terms of Steadicam, dolly shots, handheld shots, all kinds of stuff.
Definitely. So
this had a ton of energy because there's a battle happening. Yeah. There's a battle on the bridge that adds to the energy.
Yeah, and this scene, Seven, Tuvok arrives to initiate this mind meld, and Seven is now rotating through all the different personalities. And once Tuvok, you know, touches her face, side of her face, and the mind meld begins, now we enter into this crazy alternate reality of the Borg cube, the inside of a Borg cube.
Yeah, and we're in the mind meld.
We're in the mind
basically
meld.
Basically inside the mind meld. Yes. So we're inside Tuvok and Seven's
brains.
Experience, which is sort of manifesting as this, they're on a Borg ship is what it feels, it looks like. They're on a Borg ship and it's packed with all of these assimilated aliens. So tons of makeups that they had to do for this sequence. The little girl is there, all kinds of different species. And they're all, and the lights are, there's like strobe lights going and there's colorful lights everywhere and people like reaching. And I have to say, it reminded me, I wrote down, it looks like Studio 54 entrance when I went there in the 80s. It looked like a club, like everybody dancing.
I just read a very long article about Studio 54 yesterday. So it's so funny that you bring up that reference. You were one of the few people, well, not a few people, but you were one of the people that were able to enter Studio 54. So that's
great. I went there back in the 80s, although not in the heyday. The heyday was like late 70s, 78, early 80s.
79, yes.
I probably went there, you know, mid 80s or something.
Okay, so kind of on the down of the popularity.
I did get to see the village people perform at Studio 54.
Oh, and they were there a lot. So
they performed there quite a bit. They came down on this like this catwalk
like
that went
thing?
Up and down. No, it was a catwalk that was on motors. And so they came down to the village people, which was very fun. I mean, but they were past their prime at this point.
Were they the village geezers at this point, or what are you thinking?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't even know if the village people stayed the same people. Like, I feel like they started rotating in different
other village
performers
people.
Because it was a character, right? It was
so basically if they aged out, they would bring someone else that would come in.
Yeah,
with like
Menudo.
Menudo did that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They just cast another singer. Yep. Yeah, so Studio 54 was one of the vibes that I had from that.
Yeah.
The other thing I have to touch on is David Livingston, who's always very experimental and pushing the envelope. At this point, I'm going to go through the lenses that I noticed he shot with. So, you know, like
during the mind meld,
in the Borg cube, what we saw was basically, I'm going to say, it's like David Livingston just vomited out every possible lens that you could pick to do weird photography and shots.
Before you list them, let me just say that this is very similar to July the 4th when you're watching a fireworks display.
Yes.
And then at the very end, they throw up everything. The grand finale. So
it's
this
big
is the finale
of fireworks.
But
this
it's a lens
is, this
finale.
David Livingston's lens finale. So
list them.
He used the mesmerizer lens, which is this lens that sort of it turns and stretches things like this.
I love that name.
Very trendy back in the 80s and 90s. It was a lens that was used that it sort of moved around and mesmerized things.
Yeah.
Okay. Mesmerizer lens. He used a fisheye lens, which is, you know, people are familiar with that. Mm-hmm. He used something called a lens baby or a squishy lens. Not sure. Two different brand names. But basically, it's two pieces of glass with gel on the inside. And you move it around and it sort of diffuses the outside. Mm-hmm. He used some kind of prism lens or refractor lens that had all of these shards of light flying with the mesmerizer and the squishy and the fisheye and the lens baby. Boom. Boom.
Okay.
Lens explosion.
I'm just wondering, I mean, did he think that he was getting fired after this episode where he was like, guess what? I'm going to throw every lens at this.
I know that David really likes to push the envelope. Yeah. I know that he doesn't ask for permission often. He said
that to us
in the interview. He's like, don't ask for permission. Just do it.
Just do it.
And I'm of the school, being a producer, Yeah. It's like, hey, let's ask for permission first. Let's make sure we're shooting the right thing. Mm-hmm. But I think in this case, he was very bold and it did work because it was a really stylized, very cool thing. But it was an explosion of every lens, trick lens you could use.
All right.
Anyway, we go back to engineering. The battle's still going on.
Actually, I have bridge right now.
Yeah,
right?
We go to engineering and bridge intercut. Yeah. This goes back and forth a lot.
My note very quickly on the bridge. Yeah. My note is that I am really projecting in this scene. Like this part of the episode, everybody's
screaming,
almost screaming things out. Yeah, yeah, it's nuts.
Chakotay is at Tuvok Station. Very rare occurrence. I don't know why he's over there. We could have thrown anybody in there and he could have stayed by his love.
Yeah.
Janeway, and then,
and then the doctor screaming at Tuvok so that he has to terminate the meld because otherwise he will never get his love back. Seven of nine, I suppose.
Lots of handheld and Steadicam shots in here again, moving all over the place, going crazy. Yeah. Let's say we're back inside the meld. Tuvok is fighting with a Klingon and stuff. We see this wide shot of like a pit or something. He throws a Klingon over.
Which we thought it was Tuvok. I thought Tuvok got thrown over, but no.
It was a Klingon. It was a Klingon, but that's definitely a VisFX set extension. It's, we didn't have a set that big. It's supposed to be some part of the Borg cube, I guess. Right. But great work by our VisFX department and stunt department to do a big high fall like that when I know we didn't have a giant set.
And I'm sad that I evidently, I will assume that that was the son of Kavok that was thrown over.
Probably.
That guy was the party, you know, party guy.
It's only a mind meld. It's not reality. Yeah, it's not like having a dream.
That's right. Right. It's okay.
We go to engineering. We're losing power to the field emitter. We have to use emergency power. Basically, we, you know, finally defeat this vinculum thing. Yeah. And
it's turned offline. Finally.
Fizzles off. Yeah. And finally.
And Janeway's. Boom, yes. Done. Janeway's wonderful line there. Very diehard-esque. She says,
lock onto the damn thing. Beam it into space. It's just like, get it out of here. I just
love
that line.
It's good. Mm-hmm. We go back to the regeneration bay and she's waking up. She's back. We hear a captain's log that this has been a couple of weeks later, I think a week or two or something. And
gives her a clean bill of health.
Yeah. Right? Seven talks to the doctor. They have a nice conversation where the doctor says you're good, but he does say to her, you know, you may not hear these voices, but they'll always be with you, which is an interesting, that really stuck with me. I like that line a lot. And Seven says to the doctor, I want to thank the crew. You know, they all cared so much and tried so hard to make this happen. And then she really is appreciating it. And she says, in particular, there's somebody I need to go talk to.
Yeah.
And the next thing we do, we cut into the hallway and she's walking around the corner with Naomi and she's giving her homework. She's got pads with all kinds of homework. Mm-hmm. She says star charts for the next 3 years or the next three systems that Voyager is going to pass through, star charts, sociological data on 173 Delta Quadrant species. And she says, all of this is relevant if you want to be the captain's bridge assistant. And Naomi says, I will comply.
And Great line, Doherty. Mm-hmm. Yes. And she asked for one more thing. Mm-hmm. Seven asked for one more thing of Naomi. She says, I need you to teach me how to play Katiskot. So that ends the episode. Yeah. Great episode. Really, really dig this episode. What is your theme / lesson for this episode?
My theme for this was that we all have a connection to our past and the things that have wounded us and that it'll always be there inside of us, but we have to learn to accept that and to move on and grow from it. And that's why that last line of the doctor sort of sucked to me. Those voices will always be there. You may not hear them. That those wounds are always there with us. We may not feel them or see them, but having an awareness that they may show up now and then and to grow from that. Yeah. What about you?
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it?
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram now.
I guess it has more to do with just the persistence that the crew had. No matter how, you know, the chips were down, everything was against them, but they kept working. They right. didn't stop. They said, we're not going to quit. We're not going to do what a Borg drone would do mm-hmm. once they know that they're malfunctioning, which is just, you know, cut off, end that life of that drone. Mm-hmm. They kept going. And I just love that message of, you know, you've got to keep that persistence there and keep on trekking and, yep. and get it done.
Yep. Awesome. Here's my rating here.
So let's rate this.
Ratings of the episode. Mm-hmm. I historically I'm pretty tough on some episodes, but this one I thought was really, really good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10, mm-hmm. which is, on the higher end of my scale. What about you?
I concur with you. I have an 8 as really? Well. Yeah, mainly because of this is a one woman show, practically a tour de force.
David Livingston. Even though I'm teasing a little about the vomiting all the lenses that he could use, it was beautifully shot. Like camera movement, phenomenal camera movement, great challenging stuff. I did notice a lot of challenging stuff. Steadicam throughout.
Agreed.
Very complex.
And for the short amount of time that Jerry had to prepare for this, she did such a phenomenal job with the short amount of time that she had to do. So I'm actually going to pump it up to 8.1. I'm going to give it 8.1.
Ooh,
yeah.
Look at you.
A little bit more.
All right. Here I have an envelope in my hand.
Drum roll.
That has the official fan rating based on our captain and admiral survey. And the survey says infinite regress.
Yeah.
Admiral and captain rating is 7.3 out of 10.
Okay.
7.3. We were close. We actually went higher than the fans. Interesting.
Yes. Did you just pull a David Letterman when you threw throw the paper? Yeah. That's David Letterman does.
Yes, exactly.
Or maybe Johnny. Does Johnny Carson throw things too? His little cue cards?
Probably. And they used to put the crash in. He'd throw it.
The window glass. Breaking the glass. Yeah. All right. So we're close. 7.3.
We both got, I got an 8. You got an 8.1. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Not bad. All right.
Not
well,
bad at all.
Thank you everyone for tuning in to our review and discussion behind the scenes discussion of Infinite Regress. Join us next week when Robbie and I will be talking about the episode, Nothing Human, Nothing Human. And as the Ferengi say it, Human. So Nothing Human next week.
See you everybody.
See ya.